Welcome to MSP Mindset with Damian Stevens, where we have real, no BS conversations with real MSPs who have real struggles. We dive into all things business, including marketing, culture, work-life balance, and more, all to help you grow your business, think differently, and get out of your comfort zone. Hey guys, welcome to this episode of MSP Mindset. I'm really stoked to have Tim Golden with me. So I'm going to bring Tim on. Before I do, a couple things. We're going to get into all things compliance and a new acronym that he's coined. I'm not going to spoil it, but stay tuned for that. So real quickly, a little bit about Tim. He is the founder and CEO of ComplianceRisk.io. We just covered that I think 2 months from now is 20 years, so nearly 20 years working both governance risk and compliance. He's on the Cybersecurity Advisory Council for CompTIA, and he's the CTO at Vital Technology Services. So if you think he can't relate to being an MSP, he can, because he's still an active MSP. So without further ado, welcome, Tim.
Hey Damian.
Thanks for having us here.
So yeah, we're talking in the green room, like, oh my gosh. You know what, I'm just a couple of months short of 20 years as like an official role in the GRC space. I mean, I have been in the tech space since the 80s or so. Like, I was kind of funny. So we're like shuffling some offices around, and I grabbed a box, and I should go grab this because it's really cool. Like, I found a floppy disk, like the 5 1/4 inch floppy disk. And written across the top of it said risk. Now, it was the game of risk, not risk. But yeah, way back in the early 80s, I, you know, did some dabbling and some coding back then, and writing some programs and some games. And yeah, it was kind of fun. But I'm like, wow, 20, maybe even 30 years at this point. Gosh, I'm old.
That's funny. So, you seem to be one of the few folks that has a different take on this. So, I have a lot of questions. I want to talk about it, you know, for some background guys. Tim's the one who I've been calling and saying, what do you do with this? Well, what picked acronym? CMMC, NIST, FedRAMP, et cetera, et cetera. What do I do with an ISO 27001 or SOC 1 or 2? Or, you know, what do I do here? What do you suggest? And not just defining the terms, but how do you achieve that? So before we dig into that, tell us a little bit about how you got here, what the heck compliance risk is, compliancerisk.io.
Yeah. So as I mentioned earlier, right, I've been the CTO or Vital Tech and RMC for, gosh, 20 plus years. And, you know, as federal government contractors, there was a little line in one of the contracts way back in 2006, 2007, something like that, that was like, you will adhere to NIST 800-53 version 3. What is that? Nobody seemed to know what that was. And so as I started to dig into it and realize, oh, okay. Now it's gone from version 3 to version 4 to version 5 all the way through the years. And I basically spent the better part of a year understanding the controls and then writing all the documentation to support those controls for what we were actually doing. Like, back then, you couldn't Google incident response plan because it didn't exist. And so I basically spent the last 17 years supporting federal government clients all around governance and risk and compliance, starting with that NIST 800-53, you know, low, moderate, high. You've probably heard terms FedRAMP and all that kind of stuff. And so, yeah, I've sledged my way through it for, you know, close to 2 decades now.
And this is why I wanted to have you on, Tim, because guys, if you're listening here, Tim's been through it, the good and the bad. And we've talked in the green room. We've talked a few other times as Tim's helped me, because I will often go to Tim and say, what do I do with this? What is this really? How do you actually get there? Like, I understand, I can read what it says, and I see a whole lot of salacious articles saying you need to do everything and all now. But I feel like you can actually understand what it's like. So if you're listening, this is what we're going to get into. Like, how do you really do this? So I'm going to kind of start with that first question, Tim, which is, as an MSP, what do you do with all these things? Because I regularly get MSPs that come to me and say, I don't know. They said ITAR or FedRAMP or CMMC, and I'm not sure what to do. And in general, and then being in the backup space, they'll often say, do I need a backup that does that, or, you know, other things. So where do you even start if you're just kind of, you're not an MSP, and, or even if you are, this compliance and governance is just not your wheelhouse?
Yeah. So you hear me say this on our Team Tim Friday calls all the time. Start someplace, do something. Like, how do you eat an elephant? You know, one bite at a time, like all those stupid acronyms, right? All those stupid cliches. If I were an MSP and I were starting out today, or even if I was a mature MSP, knowing that compliance is here already, that FTC safeguards are already here, that all these FedRAMPs and SOCs and you know, leggings and whatever other acronyms we want to use. Yes, I use the word leggings. I would start with one of two types of things. I would either start with the CIS framework, or I would start with the CompTIA Trustmark program. Either of those two things are going to help you begin your journey into compliance, right? And if you don't even know where to start, you can reach out to us. We started this by building a peer group, by building a community of MSPs. Like you said, I don't know where to start. Great. You know what? Come learn from us. Come take my 20 years of sledging through it and let me help teach you, teach the next generation of MSPs, so I don't have to do it anymore.
Yeah.
That's really where it's at. Like, where do I start? Pick a peer group, find a friend, you know, phone a friend, get a consultant, come to Compliance Risk, join a peer. Like, you don't have to join our stuff, but find a trusted advisor, you know, talk to the people in the space. We're all willing and able and wanting to help. Start someplace, call us, join our peer group, whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. That's super helpful. Now, the peer group, is that like crazy expensive? Do I need to know all this stuff before I join it? Tell me how approachable is the peer group for a typical MSP?
We have MSPs at all different levels. I have some, like, there's people way smarter than me. Awesome. Because I need that help. Right. And then there are, like, you know, there's one that's, he's just one human and he has one HIPAA client, but he wants to do it right. And so the peer group, we meet every week, right? We do guided trainings. There's some accountability pieces to it. You know, a couple of weeks ago, I just did a whole training on data flow diagrams. We actually did on screen live together. Let's build out a data flow diagram. Right. So these are the things that we do week after week after week during the peer group so that you can gain your own institutional knowledge backed up with Slack and other things and resources and whatnot, so that you don't have to go to Reddit and get blasted because you posted a question you didn't know. And it's not out there in the general public that your clients can Google and find on Reddit. It is internal. We can have the hard questions. We can have the dumb questions. Like, there's no dumb question. You can come and ask this stuff, right? So how much is it? It's a couple hundred bucks a month. Bring your whole MSP, right? The peer group is what really started this off. And it's really transformed into our platform, Polygon, which we can get into in a little bit, right? Which really transformed into, hey, I'm learning a lot, but now I need help with policy and documentation, right? You asked me a few minutes ago, where can I start? Start writing. Even if you open up a document, and whether you use my platform or anything, open up a document and say, my password policy is this. And it's three sentences. And you're going to review it in 3 months. And then you iterate and you build and you grow. Start writing it down. Start putting it together. As we like to say, just document it.
Yeah. Well said. So peer group, I know you're not your guy that likes to tell you can go anywhere. You just write it down. You don't have to use your group. But that seems like a whole lot of value. And personally, I care a lot. This is part of the reason I do this MSP Mindset, is I want to build a group of folks that where we help and just like you're doing today and pour into. So that peer group sounds like an amazing resource to have on the table. How do you, if, especially maybe others are experts, but how would you recommend that as an MSP that I implement and maintain a culture for compliance or governance? Because it's, yeah, so right, I mean, it's not one time project.
It's kind of the same thing that we say with cybersecurity or even a sales or even like, doesn't matter the business unit within your MSP. Change is hard. I get it. Like bringing that mindset to, you know, the intern that you just brought in out of high school for the summer that wants to get in tech, right? That needs to start at the top, right? You hear this all the time. That stuff flows down, right? At the end of the day, regardless of how big or how small or, you know, how efficient or how inefficient your MSP is, it starts with your humans. Having a human that is your champion for governance or risk or compliance or all of it as a whole. Having that human be the champion and then the support from the executive team that backs that up, right? And that human can come join the peer group, learn and grow and become efficient for your MSP so that you all can do this work going forward. Start with the human.
Nice. So let me back up one step. I know I asked this to you before, and maybe this is just a dumb question, but I like to ask this. As an MSP, how should I frame this? Is this one of those, is it a little bit like I just hire an MSSP for the really hard stuff and I put in just a fundamental program? I know that's some way, a way some people have approached cybersecurity and not, I don't want to be an MSSP. It's not where I need to be. Should I approach it that way and say, you know, these other guys are the governance compliance guys and I just need to understand what, you know, stay in my lane? Or is this broad that like if I'm not doing something here that 5 years down the road I really don't have a business being in managed services?
Yeah, you know, here's the thing. We've been saying for years compliance is coming. It's already here. Things like the FTC safeguard that just rolled out in June 9th, like it's only going to get more prevalent in this space, right? And so wrapping your head around a compliance program within your MSP needs to start with yourself, needs to start with building out your documentation that supports the work that you're doing. And as our friend Matt Lee says, that helps to build the defensibility in your MSP that you are doing what you say you should be doing according to your contracts, right? When we think about cyber liability insurance, we all know they're asking for some general concepts of stuff. Are you doing backups? Are you doing 2FA? Are you doing security awareness training? Next gen AV? Like there's 5 or 6 common things that all of the cyber insurance companies are asking. And you know what? You need to have the policies and procedures to back that up. Mm-hmm. Yeah, just saying I do backup, like that might be a checkbox today on the liability forms, but you know damn well they're going to start asking, what are you doing? Are they immutable? How often are you doing? Do you test them? Do you do a full-blown restore, right? Liability insurance is starting to dictate this stuff. Yeah, there's government regulations all over the place. We know that. But brass tacks? You won't be able to get insurance at some point, or your insurance are going to be way too high because you're not doing the things that they're asking you to do. And Polygon, our app, can actually help you do that at scale. Our platform can help you do that at scale. And if you don't want to use, like, yeah, I don't want to make this about us and our platform, but, you know, SharePoint, WordDoc, I don't care. Like, start somewhere. Start writing your disaster recovery plan. You don't have one? ask me. I'll give you a good template. Start mm-hmm. writing your password policy. In fact, our friends over at Fifth Wall, a cyber liability insurance company, we work together with them to take the incident response plan that I have and modify that and build it out to not only to address the CIS, right, cyber version 8 controls, but to also have it work with cyber liability insurance. You can grab that template right off our website, right? I don't care. Go grab it. It's fine. Start writing. I know everybody hates it. Trust me, as the dyslexic guy, I hate it. Thank goodness I have good editors.
I can relate to that. You were mentioning, you know, backup and that sort of thing. And we were talking about some that in the green room, and it sounds like you had kind of an interesting story regarding backup.
All right. This is going to require me to just sip a little bit of my water.
There you go.
So you asked me, all right, I'm just going to sit back, relax, get comfortable. You asked me, do I have a backup disaster story? The answer is, yeah, don't we all?
Right.
So for those of you that don't know, and it probably doesn't matter, like my birthday is the 5th of July, which usually means the 4th of July. We have a big celebration, rolls my birthday in, fireworks, whole nine yards. I love it. I love bringing the family and the neighborhood and the friends together to light off fireworks and have fun. My in-laws have a place on a lake, so it makes it really convenient to be able to safely do fireworks, not just for the 4th, but for my birthday, something I've always loved to do.
Nice.
So, I don't know, back however many years ago, back when before M365 was a thing, we were still running Exchange internally. It might have been back in 2003, right? Maybe around that time frame. And so, you know, I do the alerting, I do the monitoring, I have the tools set up to keep watch, and we're off to the lake, 4th of July weekend. Let's just pause there. What do we know what happens on 4th of July weekends?
That's right. That is yeah, so true.
You know, it's all my fault, right? Because way back 25 years ago, I started the trend. I'm kidding. So yeah. Anyways, you know, it's the morning of the 4th and we're all prepping and I get an alert. Exchange is not responding. Okay. I'm just going to take a few minutes and take a look real quick because we're at the lake and, you know, it's whatever. Log into the computer, spin up the VPN, do all my things appropriately so that I'm securely into the network. And I can't ping. I can only get to the firewall. And nothing is running at that point. The DHCP, nothing is running at that point. And I'm like, okay. I could probably get away with it till Monday, but that's not who I am as a person, right? That's not right. Who we are. So right. I tell my wife, we're 55 minutes away from the office, maybe an hour with traffic. So I'm like, just going to run down there and take a look. Get my car, drive down there, blah, blah, blah. Now, this is 4th of July weekend, so there's traffic, right? Anyways, I get to the office, and it's a really warm weekend for that matter. It's probably one of the hottest weekends on record, and at least at that point. And I get to the office and I'm like, that's weird. And I open up the server room door and I get blasted with like what felt like burning, you know, lava temperature. I was like, oh my gosh, it is smoldering hot in here. And sure enough, what happened was that the building air conditioning went out. The server room got up to, I don't know, 190,000 trillion degrees because there was no air conditioning. And there
were Fahrenheit or Celsius?
Yeah, there were 45 servers, plus the racks, plus the networking gear, plus. And you get it. Like, it was hot. And the room was small. It was maybe 3 feet by 5 feet and, you know, fully insulated, whole nine yards. Yeah, no air conditioning.
Keeps the heat in.
Well, the server fried. We lost, on the Exchange server, we lost 3 drives out of our RAID system. So what was it? RAID 5, I think we had back then. So we're basically done. Like, we were done. Right? 3 out of the 5 drives were, like, molten metal. Yeah. So, but thank God, a couple years before that, I wrote a disaster recovery plan that said, hey, this is what you do in the event of an incident, right? We already had backups. We were doing tape-based backups. We still are in some cases. And I could do a restore. Thank goodness I had spare drives, and that data had been backed up all on those tapes that were, you know, taken out of the building, put in cold storage, you know, appropriate disaster recovery plan. And you know what? I was able to get that machine back up and running with the data restored and everything kind of working for that exchange environment like that day.
Wow.
Because I had a good left of boom preparation, shift left. I had solid documentation in place and I had the processes to back it up with this is what we do, who does the tapes, how much is getting backed up, blah, 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 blah. I had a solid plan in place before the room literally turned into lava.
Wow. That's crazy.
And I still made it back to the lake in time to light off fireworks.
That's what I was going to say. There you go. That is better than most stories, I will say. And having a disaster recovery plan is unfortunately better than a lot of folks. So,
well, but if you think about it, if I didn't have that, if I didn't prep beforehand, if I didn't put the procedures in beforehand, I'd be like, we'd be gone. Like the business would be done. Like if I didn't have the backups, I didn't have the human monitoring those on the daily basis, taking the tapes, putting the tapes in the safe, the whole nine yards, right? Like it would have been so much worse.
Yeah. Yeah.
I can, you know, and by, yeah. And by the way, as a federal government contractor, data retention, email retention was a thing.
Yeah, for sure. Thank you for sharing that story. Speaking of backups, guys, this is brought to you by Servosity. And the thing that makes us, that separates us at all is I was an MSP that lost data. Now, that may not sound like a great thing to talk about, but I don't want that to be you. And the reason basically boiled down to I didn't have the process and the people to test. So the only things in my mind that differentiate us is we bring the process and the people. So think a SOC, but for backup to this for you so that we can manage all the backups for you. Go ahead and check that they're working. Go ahead and manage them. Go ahead and proactively fix them so that you can focus on the things that actually differentiate you, not babysit backups. And most importantly, we test the backups daily, weekly, monthly, and quarterly. Done for you. So if you'd like to just chat about that, book a call at servosity.com/call. I'll be happy to talk to you personally and tell you what the heck we do, whether you want to do business with us or steal my process. Kind of like Tim, I'd love for you to take my process and implement it so you're not one of those people that I was. So Tim said, go steal my template, go steal my process. Either way, if you do something, you take Tim's disaster recovery plan, you take our process that we built over the last 18 years and seen so many data losses, you won't regret that. So anyway, take us up on one of those.
That's awesome, Damian. See, that's what I love about this community is the fact that, you know, we're all willing to give and share and help. And yeah, I mean, we will need to make money along the way and put food on our table and so on and so forth. But that's what I love about this community is that, you know, we're willing and wanting to help each other out, right? At least I am. I can't speak for everybody. I can see that you are as well, right? And that's important, right? There's so many other industries in the world that's like so cutthroat and like it's just not a normal thing. MSPs are a little, you know, they're a little cut from a different cloth. And I love that about this community. So
I do too. And I feel like as an industry, if we learn from each other, if we learn from the mistakes that I made or the mistakes that you made or the MSP that got Buffalo attacked or whatever it is, if we can learn collectively, then we're all stronger. We're all better off. And the clients are better off. And I think that's what's one of the areas. One of the reasons I used to love being an MSP and I love working with MSPs on a daily basis is there's plenty of business and we can all get better And whether that's in compliance or security, governance, process for backup and DR, whatever the process is, process for governance, process for sales, like we were talking about earlier in the green room, you don't have that.
And that's just it. My life goal is to take the crap in my brain and teach the next generation so I don't have to.
Yeah.
Well, there's always that little caveat, so I don't have to do it anymore.
Right. Right. So speaking of this, stuff out of your brain, maybe everybody in security gets this, but tell me about shifting your mind left.
Yeah. So, you know, we spend as MSPs, you know, we're the techies, we're the ones and zeros, the bytes and bits, right? We spend a lot of time on that right of boom. And for those that don't know, right, left, middle, boom is the thing that happened. For me, it was when the server room melted because the AC, that was boom. Right of boom was putting it all back together. Left of boom, or shift left, is all that preparation work that I did to prepare us so that I could make it back to fireworks on time, right? Left of boom is all the not fun stuff, all that mm-hmm. documentation, all that process and procedure, so that when boom does happen, we know what to do. We don't have mm-hmm. to panic. I just have to pull out a document and be like, oh, yeah. Oh, you know what? I need to buy. Oh, here's who I call. Here's accounting. Here's my vendor list, right?
Right.
So left of boom is helping the MSPs take that preparation, that be prepared Boy Scout model, that shift left, starting on the other side of boom by getting prepared. That's nice. Essentially what shift left is get prepared, you know, shift your mind left, shift your business left. And you know what? I guarantee you're probably doing some of this already. I guarantee if we were doing this live and we had the stream going and I asked the question, how many of the MSPs listening right now, I can't say show of hands, how many of you right now either started with a business plan, right? Or maybe started with like some document that said, these are the clients I want to go after. Maybe you had a little bit of a sales process. Maybe you have an onboarding process and an offboarding process. You're doing some of these things already. It's just a matter of expanding that mindset and moving that to different areas of your business as it relates to compliance, risk, security.
Well said. We're probably doing more than we realize. I just got to get, like you said, get started. And in that area, if I'm getting started, what are some of the common mistakes or what should I look out for as I'm just getting started?
Yeah. So there are dozens and millions and zillions of document templates all over the internet. I even have some. Doesn't matter. There's millions of templates all over the place. My recommendation would be don't just grab one and copy pasta company name, right? Because these documents need to actually reflect your business practices in place and your client's business practices in place. No template's going to do that. It will give you a good baseline. It will give you some starting points, some things to think about. But the days of copy pasta company name and a Word document and calling it your incident response plan are done. Insurance companies are smart. They, you know, the first thing they're going to ask is, where's your policies? Where's your documentation? Show me what you're doing and prove to me that you've been doing it. Mm-hmm. I grabbed this off of the SANS Institute and, oh, in the middle, I missed company name a couple times. No. Like not going to fly anymore. That days of checkbox stuff is done. So as an MSP, I would say spend some time writing out what exists, not just some template you found off the interwebs. That being said, our templates are a little different. And I say that because our documentation's been proven across the industry with external auditors, and we write them in a way that basically explains what needs to go in this box. If you're like, I don't know, we'll pick incident response. We'll pick password maybe, because that's easy for people to like, following the NIST guidance. The NIST guidance says this: when you're doing your password management stuff, make sure that these are the things that you have in place. If you don't, strip this piece out of the document. There's decision points in our templates. There's guidance in our templates. There's my 20 plus years of fumbling away. And by the way, failing my way. I didn't pass every audit and I'm still not passing every audit, right? There's this little thing called action and milestone, right? We're still adjusting day after day, week after week, month after month, right? So yeah, the first thing I would say is start documenting and document what's there, not just some template you found off the interwebs.
Yeah.
And if you have a question, come ask.
Well said. So get started. Ask community, phone a friend, peer groups, like you said, even other peer groups. What, as an MSP, how should I approach this in terms of, I think some people saw cybersecurity as, for example, and I just use that as a comparison, they saw it as a great way to make a ton of money if they're the early adopter and that sort of thing. And others saw it as, I need to not be behind this curve. I need to, I don't know if I'm going to become an MSSP, but I need to have the appropriate stack. I need to understand what's going on. And still others, unfortunately, I think are waiting it out and doing nothing or close to nothing and still have, you know, age old antivirus and nothing else. So, you know, what's your recommendation? Is this the next way to make money and only pay attention for that to help my clients? Like you said, cyber liability insurance is where the rubber meets the road. Or is this a place that I just need to protect my MSP? Help me understand.
So there's a lot of different thoughts, a lot of different threads here, right? So I would say from protecting my MSP, having the documentation, having the governance, having the system in place that is what I'm doing. And I can build that defensibility that says, listen, here is our password policy. All of our end users have been trained specifically on this password policy, and we're using some tools and technologies to monitor that that's in place. Again, you can do all the side in Polygon, but for the MSP, it builds defensibility for you. Now, you hear this term a lot, documented repeatable process, right? That will gain you efficiencies, right? But there isn't a really great way to do that at scale, except with Polygon now, right? So when we look at, chances are the password policy that you're going to have for your MSP is probably going to be very similar to your clients, maybe a couple minor tweaks, right? And I'm not saying every document's going to be like this, but the password policy, the incident response policy, some of these baseline things are going to be the same or very similar across your clients. Our SaaS platform lets you do that at scale. Even if you're not using our SaaS platform, starting that process and having an actual process, you're going to gain efficiencies. It's going to separate you from the other MSP down the street. And in gaining those efficiencies, you're obviously going to make more money, or you're going to free up time to do something else, right? Having that documented, repeatable process, regardless of the tool or the platform, will get you efficiencies. And efficiencies frees up time, frees up money to do other things. You get it. I'm not going to go down that whole path.
Right. So just want to go back to your platform. I know you're not very good, shameless self-promoter, and I don't need you to be that, but why? And what does at scale mean? You said do it at scale. So I got 10 clients that need this. What does that mean?
So let's talk about traditional, like I hate to say this, the MSPs that have already gained some efficiencies, right? They're a little bit more in their journey as an MSP, which means they're a little bit more mature. And I hate that word because I like to think that we're all mature adults. So it's probably the wrong word, but until I can find the right word. So more mature MSPs know that they want to do this, may have a champion or a group of people, or at least know they want to do this. Mm-hmm. And the traditional way that not just the tools, but they've been doing it might have been over email, maybe a SharePoint site, maybe some you know, FTP document management, some document platform, whatever. They've been doing these, but it doesn't allow them the ability to do this at scale. I'll pick on SharePoint for a minute. So you have 10 clients, 10 documents per client. That's 100 documents you have to manage on a regular cadence, right? And they're not all going to expire and be reviewed on the same date, right? So they're going to have varying dates. So if you're doing this across 10 SharePoint sites with 10 documents apiece, it does not scale well, right? Not only that, but you don't get the efficiencies and the tracking, the signature approvals, the end user training and adoption. You don't get that stuff without building custom SharePoint pieces, right? I love SharePoint for what it's intended for. But for a governance program, SharePoint is not intended for a governance program. Polygon is the only, or maybe the first, you know what, screw it. I'm going to say it is the first and only governance as a service platform built by an MSP dedicated to MSPs. Governance as a service, so I like to say, we put the gas on your policies and procedure.
I love it. We need another acronym, and we need better acronyms. GAS is awesome. Hey,
who doesn't want a little gas? I mean, my dog is over here. She just had dinner, and she's in the little room with me, but, you know.
Just a little, not too much, right?
Just a little. That's why the window's open. You can probably hear the birds chirping in the background.
Yeah, it's a whole different meaning of tweeting.
Yeah. True. Great. So, now we're going to get Elon Musk in here because we use the word Twitter.
Wonderful. Welcome that. So, we'll get into a banter like Ian and Zuckerberg there. So governance as a service, obviously nobody's really tackling that. And one thing we share is being founders that were MSPs building something for MSPs. So, how does that shape what you do? Why does that matter?
You mean, how does coming from an MSP go into a SaaS? Well,
in serving MSPs, right? Being an MSP that serves MSPs.
Well, I hate to say I can relate to their pain points, right? I hate to say that. Like, I struggled with these things myself, right? So, it feels like every day I'm being asked for a new set of guidelines or documents or procedures or updating them in the MSP. And there's just no efficient way to do that. So I can relate to that because I do that work still, right? I still live and breathe that work. And yeah, I get it. It's hard to sell. You know, put on my MSP sales hat for a minute. Like, I get it. Like, how do I explain to my client, you got to be doing this, right? I get it. So bringing those years of experiences as an MSP, living and breathing it every day, like, you hear this all the time. Oh, MSP now turned vendor. ConnectWise was an MSP when they started. Case in point.
Right. Now they kind of are again to a certain level. Yeah.
So I've lived it. I'm still living it. I'm probably going to live it for another 20 decades. Who knows?
Right. Well, that's what I love is you're an MSP struggling with the same things. And for some reason, crazy enough to be obsessed about compliance. And I say that, in a way that seems odd to me, but also in a way that's delightful because I can relate to being obsessed about testing and process related to backups. And most people find testing, process, or backups, and especially the combination, incredibly boring.
It's not sexy.
Yeah.
Not the ones and zeros. It's not sexy. I get it. You know what? Polygon makes documentation more sexy because we got the gas.
The marketing writes itself here. Yes.
No, I love that. It is. It's not sexy. You know what? But not everything has to be sexy. Do you know what? Like, I go to a fancy restaurant and I get the meal plated in front of me and it looks gorgeous and it smells amazing. And oh my gosh, I can't wait to dive into eating that. Right. Mm-hmm. Except somebody's got to do those dishes. Doing dishes is not sexy.
No.
Somebody needs to clean that bathroom at some point.
That's right.
Oh wait, is that another gas reference?
Right. Yeah. So these are the things you've got to do. And I don't know, drawing what you're saying, Tim, it feels like the things you don't want to do in a lot of cases, do the dishes, clean the bathroom, do compliance, deal with backups. But you know, you've got to do them. And in some cases, this may not be your differentiator. This may not be what you're the best at either as a firm or as an individual, right? So get some help. So it sounds like a lot of barriers, right? It sounds like they could get help from lots of places, lots of peer groups. They could get help from you as an individual. They could get help from Polygon. They could get help from your peer group. What's the, as an MSP, like, how do I get started with this? And what I mean by that is you kind of cover that, but let me get a little more specific. I'm struggling with all these alphabet soups coming through. And ITAR, FedRAMP, CMMC, NIST, 853, 800, 171, you know, whatever it is. Where do I even go? How do I know to say, no, don't do that. No, don't do that. How do I pick a lane? How do I know which one to start with? Is there an order? Do I say no to everything? And then all of a sudden one day I completed 100 documents and just everything.
So a couple of different points, right? What do I do for my MSP and what do I do for my clients, right? So there's two parts of that. What am I going to do to get my own house in order, to get my MSP together? I'm going to go to CompTIA. I'm going to sign up for the Trustmark program, and I'm going to work my way through the CompTIA Trustmark program, which is obtainable. I know that because being part of the Cybersecurity Council at CompTIA, I helped build that out, right? So whatever. I was part of that, and I know one of the goals that we had was to make it obtainable and achievable for an MSP like yourself, right? Yeah, there's stuff you got to do. Yeah, you need to be making sure 2FA and all this fun stuff, but get my own house in order, number one. Right. There is no thing today. Well, maybe there is, but there's nothing that says in the United States an MSP has to be certified like an electrician, like a plumber, like a doctor. Like, that's just wrong, by the way. That's all. However, CompTIA's Trustmark can move you in that direction. That's for me as an MSP. My clients, that's the other side of the coin.
Mm-hmm.
What industry are they in? What legal and regulatory requirements are they legally bound to? Legally bound, right? So there's law and there's stuff in place, like call it the fintech, right? The financial industry, right? CPAs. There's laws in place that they can't maintain doing business if they're not doing things, right? In fact, I think I read a couple not too long ago, New York instituted cybersecurity awareness training mandatory for all lawyers. All right, do you have a security awareness training policy, procedure, and platform? If you're a lawyer in New York, you need to be doing that because it's part of their law now. So as an MSP, CompTIA Trustmark, CompTIA's cybersecurity trustmark. I need to make sure I'm using the right words. And then for my clients, what legal and regulatory pieces are they bound to? Not what's coming, like we talk about CMMC, what's coming, like CMMC 171, DFARS clients, open up your contract with your client, review it, and do a DFARS review, the actual contractual legal obligations of that contract, and that's where you start.
Nice.
And I'll be releasing on Thursday a governance playbook for MSPs. So be on the lookout.
If you're listening to this, it's available. Yeah, we're pre-recording. So if you're listening to this, you can get it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So let's say 10, 11, 12, 13, by the 14th of July on Compliance Risk's website, on LinkedIn, and all the places that we're at, I will be releasing. I just wrote an ebook on a playbook for building out a governance program. So 7 steps, 4-part process. It's a whole, you know, it's all the final touches are being put on it right now. That playbook will be available July 14th on our website. So
awesome. Take advantage of that for sure, right? How to build a playbook, how to get started. So I want to switch gears and ask something a little more about you, Tim. Like, why did you decide to do this? You already had an MSP. You decided to start a peer group. You decided to build the compliancerisk.io. Why did you feel like this was necessary?
Oh, because, you know, kids are grown up. My last one just got married 3 weeks ago. Like, you know, empty nest besides my wife and the dog. I don't know. Because, you know, I got nothing better to do at 6 o'clock on a Monday night but to sit here and talk with you. No. The reality is that I kind of always had that desire to give back, right? To help the community, right? To like, and this just isn't my first sort of adventure. I mean, I had a photography studio for years, sold that off. You know, I was about to build a distillery. And, you know, kind of go down that path and, you know, whole brewery, distillery, brew pub, all 9 yards. But I've kind of always had that, like, what's the next thing, right? Okay, I've mastered this to the best of my ability. What's the next thing? And that's just kind of who I've been as a person pretty much all my life. It's funny. I was this just dawned on me. Like, I had a car stereo and alarm business back in like the mid 90s, right? I was building out car stereos that cost more than the actual cars themselves. We actually had LCD screens in the headrests of the cars. I mean, this is like mid 90s, right?
Yeah.
Now, like, they're all over the place, but I was building that stuff way back then, like learning all about, you know, which frequencies, megahertz, what end of the scale, how to build a subwoofer box to get the best bang, actually building the subwoofer boxes myself. I learned all of that I could, won a couple of those stupid King of the Hill competitions and was like, great, moved on to the next thing and, you know, moved on to the next thing and moved. So why am I doing this? Because I don't think I could ever stop doing the next thing by learning everything that I can and then giving that knowledge back.
Awesome. So what made you decide to do this instead of a distillery or something else that sounds fun?
Well, the distillery was kind of been my life dream forever. Nice. But with a bum ticker, yeah, alcohol and a bum ticker don't work too well together. So I kind of rather be around from my family. And, you know, there's probably not enough defibrillators in the distillery. So, yeah, it was a health life choice. Like, so I, you know, chose to give up. And it's funny because, all right, I'll get a little personal. So I started one of the largest online communities for beer here in New England. I was part of one of the, you know, original, you know, probably 100 people or whatever. That's, I think it's over 6,000 or 7,000 people now. I don't want to say I started that or I founded it. I was part of it and helped build it out and was an administrator there and all that fun stuff. but, you know, alcohol takes a toll on your body, right? Not that I was, you know, guzzling kegs a day, but I recognized, like, this is not physically healthy. And, you know, it was better off in the long run to it was easy enough for me to give up alcohol and say, great, like, what is my next dream? So why this over the distillery? I physically couldn't do the distillery.
Well said.
Otherwise, I wouldn't even be here because, you know, 8 years ago, I'd have been off in that direction.
Yeah. So that kind of answers why that. And what's the, why didn't you wait for somebody else to do it? Why didn't you say, I'm just going to run the MSP I've got all these other things going on. Why? What was the gap where you felt like I needed to actually help others here?
Yeah, as somebody that uses a bunch of the GRC tools in the space that pays for them, I'm not going to name them because that's not who I am, but I use them. I pay for these tools. I am part of them in other areas of the business. The behemoth tools, the multi-million dollar tools, I use them and have for years. And when they say they're a GRC tool, none of them actually govern. None of them actually have a process of governing in place, right? You know, the attestations, the signatures, the adoption, the assessments, all of that. They have pieces of it. Don't get me wrong. They have pieces of it. They're catching on. But I saw that and was like, they're all doing it wrong and it's hard. And you know, as a software developer myself for 30 plus years, I had written something. I wrote a GRC back on NIST 853 when it was version 3 in 2007. I still run that. I still run that to today. However, it's one framework and one client. Multi-tenant, blah, blah, blah. So anyways, and I still run that, right? We still use that because I hate Excel. And if I have to do something more than twice, I'm scripting it. And so when I was part of the peer group and I was showing them how I manage controls and how I manage documents in my, you know, single client, single tenant desktop web application that I built that only sits on my desktop so nobody can get to it. And it's only running when I start the server, blah, 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 blah. Like when I was showing that to the members of the peer group, they were all like, hey, can I have a copy? I got my own secure server. Can you give me the code? And I was like, maybe there's something to that. And a good friend of mine, Alex Farling over at ScalePad/Lifecycle Insights, and another good friend or colleagues, I guess I should use the word appropriately. All of these colleagues were like, dude, you should SaaSify this. You should take this and SaaSify it and give it to MSPs, you know. I had lots of great vendors and great mentors in the space that said, you need to take this and you need to bring it in front of the MSPs because they need to use this. Okay. You know, and then fast forward, here we are. We're part of the ConnectWise Pitch It competition, which is like the Shark Tank version, but for ConnectWise and vendors. So we're part of that. Like, it's been a wild ride, you know, when Alex and Wes and Matt and a bunch of other people, Marnie, and I could rattle off, you know, a dozen people that I'm probably forgetting a dozen more that was like, MSPs need to have this. You need to go do this. Okay. So, you know, I saw the gap. I had already been filling the gap for myself. Side note, we've been building web-based applications for the federal government for 17 years. So we know a thing or two about building a web app that can eventually become FedRAMP, right? That can eventually get ATO'd or third-party assessed. So I have that 17 years of knowledge of building these applications in a federal environment. I just took all that knowledge, all that coding, all that work, all that stuff, and I was like, okay, let's build this thing for MSPs to be able to bring governance as a service at scale.
governs as a service at scale. That's a really cool, I didn't know the origin story, and I appreciate you sharing that. The one thing I will say about you, Tim, is you're not very good at being a self-promoter. So, it doesn't surprise me that somebody had to encourage you to actually bring this to market instead of you just, that's very different than a lot of SaaS companies that see a gap or an opportunity just to make money versus there's a need.
Oh, don't get me wrong. I want to make money. My plan is to make money. And at some point down the road, like, listen, we're going to have grandbabies soon. Our first one is due in December. Awesome. My wife wants to hang out with grandbabies. That's awesome. Mm-hmm. Let me be the fun guy for an hour when they're not crying, and I'm just going to go build the next fast thing. But yeah, I want to be in a position so that I can give the life to our children and our grandchildren that, quite frankly, I didn't have. Without getting into too much gory details, like, I lived in my car, whatever. I'm not going to get into all that backstory, but I want to be able to give the life to my family. I don't need decades of generational $100 billion worth of wealth. What I do need is to support my family in the manner in which we want to live, and we don't live lavishly.
Right. That's awesome. So, yeah. No, my point isn't that you shouldn't make money. You clearly should. It's just that it seems like it started from genuine knowledge, not just here's a market, let's sell some stuff. It seems like it started, your intentions are full in terms of, I want to help with this market. I have knowledge and I've already built something. Let me share this. And obviously, if you share it, build the market, then you'll be rewarded for it. And I think that, you're very deserving of that. So that's a cool origin story. And
Kevin Costner, if you build it, they will come. Okay. I'm building it. My field of dreams is fully gone.
There you go. I love that. Well, I know that you've been generous enough to give me your time on this. This has been really cool, Tim. So you've mentioned your peer group. Tell us more about how to get connected to it, how to get connected to you, and find out you and Compliance Risk, how to tell the listeners how to get a hold of you.
Sure. So let me just make a point of clarification. So the peer group and Polygon kind of go hand in hand, right? I don't know where to start. Great. Join the peer group. It's going to eventually lead you into Polygon because you're going to realize you're going to need this work. Or you're an MSP and you're doing this work. Polygon is going to help you with that. And you're going to realize you want more peers. It's going to lead you back to the peer group. So they kind of go hand in hand, right? How do you find us? Listen, I'm all over the internet, right? You can find us at compliancerisk.io. You can find me on LinkedIn/in/Timothy Golden. You can find us on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram. I deleted TikTok. That was a waste. Yeah, we're all over the place. So probably the best way to get a hold of us for a demo is to book a demo on the site. If you have questions about the peer group, fill out the contact form. You'll get myself or any one of our customer service representatives, that client success managers, whatever. Like, you want to talk to me directly, shoot me a message on LinkedIn and I'll find some time.
Yeah, I can vouch for that. Tim has been very helpful to me personally and to so many others. You mentioned a number of folks that encourage you. I'm sure you've been helpful to them. So take advantage of Tim's knowledge one way or the other, peer group, personally, their services. Make sure that you're able to take advantage of the gaps. I know it was personally helpful to me. This has been awesome, Tim. Thank you for your time today. From the bottom of my heart, I appreciate the time just to talk about this topic with you today. And let's talk soon.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me. And you know what? As we say, just document it.
Just document. There you go. Sorry, guys. If you enjoyed this show and want to stay in the loop for future episodes and guests, just go to mspmindset.com/news. And if you want to learn more about Servosity, can give you a peaceful night's sleep and fewer support tickets, then go to servosity.com/call and have a conversation with me. Still in process. Dig a little deeper, whatever you'd like to do. We are live every 2 weeks. Come back and join us here in 2 weeks. We are on all the socials, all the podcast networks. Have an awesome day, and I'll see you in 2 weeks.